You're listening to Seeking Office, the Vancouver Municipal Election Podcast.
We were pretty clear on the election. When I talked to thousands and thousands of people, the referendum was pretty clear. Our mandate was pretty clear: reduce the size and cost of government.
This affects the way people are represented. The very structure of the government closest to the people, and the notion that we will make significant change to that structure without absolutely any public consultation, with no public consultation.
I represent 100,000 residents in Ward 27. That's 14 residential neighborhoods and five major business districts, and the workload is intense.
Councillor Kristen Wong-Tam strongly opposes the move to elect 25 instead of 47 councillors, saying it would make it harder for citizens to access their councillors.
I would imagine that the paperwork would probably spill to my chin. I would imagine that it would just take a lot longer. And I think it would just be grossly unfair to residents to not be able to access their local representatives.
That was Toronto Mayor John Tory and Toronto Councillor Kristen Wong-Tam responding to newly elected Ontario Premier Doug Ford. Ford, as you probably know, recently announced his intention to reduce the number of councillors in Toronto's municipal government from 47 to 25. John Tory and Kristen Wong-Tam have clear criticisms of this move to slash council. The lack of consultation by the provincial government is one of these, but another core issue, one that Kristen brings up, is that altering the relationship between councillors and constituents will impact the representation Torontonians have in their local government.
Yep. So if you believe Doug Ford, the proposed changes will improve local democracy by making Toronto's council cheaper to run and less bogged down in bureaucracy. But if you believe Ford's critics, the changes will actually hurt local democracy by distancing elected officials from the constituents who vote them in. So which one is it?
It's hard to say, but these are definitely questions that go beyond the city of Toronto. Vancouver, of course, has its own set of councillors and its own electoral system, which is different from Toronto, and in fact is different from most other Canadian cities.
That's true. I've been looking into this and learned, for example, that we don't have a ward system here in Vancouver. And as a result of that, our government also has some other unique characteristics when compared with most other Canadian cities.
Right. And so as we come closer to our civic election in October, I wonder if people know about these differences and how they affect the local government. Like, to start out, what is a ward system and what does it mean that we don't have one?
Right. And how many councillors do we have? Who do each of them represent? Who gets to vote them in? And how often does voting happen?
And which areas of the city do our representatives usually hail from?
And has our government always looked the way it does today?
It seems like ultimately, if we don't understand the way our own government works, we can't know if it's working for us. My name is Alex DeBoer.
My name is Zoe Power.
And you're listening to part two of How We Got Here, Vancouver Civic Government.
In the summer of 2013, I wanted to look at this common question in Vancouver politics, which is, what does it mean that Vancouver doesn't have a ward system?
That's Jenny Wakefield. He's a journalist and one of many people who's been interested in how Vancouver's unique electoral system affects our local government.
If you look at any other large city in Canada, pretty much, they have an electoral system where city councillors are elected out of wards, so neighborhoods, finite geographic areas, instead of at large, which is how they do it in Vancouver, which means that the councillors are elected from the entire city, much like the mayor is everywhere. And that creates a lot of issues.
So before we get into Johnny's findings, I think we need to take a step back for a second. The ward system. Most Canadian cities have wards, but in Vancouver, instead, we have what Johnny calls an at-large system, which means that all 10 of our elected councillors represent and are voted in by the entire city rather than by individual neighborhoods or regions.
Yeah, exactly. And this is today unique within the large cities of Canada. But if we look back over time, we realize that Vancouver hasn't always been so much of an outlier. In 1886, BC joins the Federation of Canada, and this lonely logging outpost on ancestral Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, and Squamish land becomes known colonially as the City of Vancouver.
And the land that makes up what we call Vancouver today is unceded, meaning it was not given away in a treaty or won in a war.
Yeah, so all of this is going on. And then when Vancouver officially incorporates, the city gets its very first council, which is comprised of one mayor and 10 aldermen, or what we know today as councillors.
Oh, okay. Alderman means the same thing as councillor. So were there also alder ladies?
Goodness, no. Canadian women don't even get to vote in elections for another 30 years from then.
Hmm. And people of color?
Nope. So in Canada at this point, as in many developed Western democracies around the world, participation and representation is very much restricted to white male citizens. So no Indigenous people are able to vote, and none of the many Chinese or Japanese migrants who were here could vote either. But from 1886, those who are allowed to vote in the city of Vancouver, they get to elect their aldermen based on a ward system.
Okay, that's interesting. So we did have wards in Vancouver.
Yeah, we had wards and we stuck with them for quite a while. But then in the 1920s, we moved to a system of proportional representation. Then we decided that was too complicated. And then we went back to an at-large system instead. And this is the point where Vancouver starts to become this weird local government exception in the Canadian political landscape.
Okay, so for now, I will note that Vancouver is weird.
Yeah, we're weird because we don't go back to a ward system like the other major Canadian cities. And then not going back to a ward system in turn makes us weird in a whole bunch of other ways as well.
Yeah, but is something this obscure just interesting to you and I and other civic politics nerds? Or does it affect the way the government works here in Vancouver? Like, does not having a ward system actually impact who gets elected?
On kind of a listless summer where I was like mowing lawns and like delivering papers and trying to figure out what the hell I was doing with my life, I spent about a couple weeks going, I can't remember how often it was, it might have been every day or every other day, to the Vancouver Archives in Vanier Park, which are very lovely. And they have in these accordion folders the nomination papers for councillors going back to, I think, 1960.
That's Jenny Wakefield, the journalist we heard from earlier. Back in that summer of 2013, Jenny was on a mission to find out what parts of Vancouver elected officials have actually come from in the city's at-large system.
What I wanted to do was look at where city councillors actually come from, because they're not elected specifically from neighborhoods, and they're are these sort of stereotypes that the left-leaning councillors would come from East Vancouver and that the real establishment types would come from, you know, Shaughnessy, Point Grey, places like that. And so I did some research looking at the nomination papers and old city directories and found out that that's sort of true, but obviously there are exceptions.
So with these decades-old nomination papers, Johnny found the home addresses for Vancouver's past councillors and mayors.
So I was able to put that into a Google map, essentially, with the help of my friend Paul Bucci. And we were able to make a map of where these people came from in the city.
And what's the what is the overarching arc of that trend? Did it fit the hypothesis that you went into it with?
Yeah, I mean, sort of. There are always exceptions, but you will see things like councillors from Cope would come from East Vancouver, so like Chinatown, Granby Woodland, so people like Ellen Woodsworth, Woody Davies, Jim Green. And then you would see that the NPA, perhaps stereotypically, had a bunch of people who lived around the West Point Grey golf course. there were just these very obvious clumps of people who were in a particular neighborhood. And then there were some neighborhoods, which is another issue with the ward system, that didn't have hardly any counselors elected from there. For example, Hastings Sunrise, that sort of area. I'm just looking on the map here. Had, I think, one counselor in that period who I could find nomination papers for. Areas to the south typically did not have a lot of counselors elected from that area, so you would pick up on these really obvious trends.
Okay, so we have general divides between right-of-center and establishment candidates, most of whom have come from the wealthier suburbs of Vancouver, whereas left-leaning candidates have tended to reside in the less represented and often less affluent southern and eastern parts of the city. But does where councillors come from impact the way they act when they're in office? Like, who's to say that someone who resides in Shaughnessy will prioritize the interests of Shaughnessy residents above those of the other groups they represent in City Hall, because technically they represent the entire city, right?
Yeah, this question is obviously more subjective. You can't answer it just by looking at the ballot papers. But since Johnny had done a lot of research on the representative divide that we would summer at the archives, I asked for his thoughts on the question.
I mean, you're obviously very influenced by who your neighbors are, where you live, what kind of problems you see every day. And if you're an at-large politician, I think you would have to kind of force yourself to go see constituents in other parts of the city and expose yourself to, you know, concerns that if you're representing people in a specific geographic area, you might be more attuned to. So, I mean, I think you could make arguments that a lot of the issues you see, like in East Vancouver, or, for example, the downtown east side, that, you know, maybe, for example, they didn't get the attention that they should have.
I've been homeless for a year and living in my tent. And, you know, it's not safe out there. We need housing. We need it today.
Welcome to the gentrification project by the City of Vancouver called Woodwards 2.
So what do we want?
Okay. And when do we want it?
Now.
What do we want?
So even though you might not be intentionally trying to privilege your area's issues, you're still going to be inherently impacted by whatever neighborhood you live and hang out in. That just makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And that's pretty much the whole justification for wards in the first place, right? Like, this is why other cities have consistently chosen to stick with the system, because they think it means that more folk get represented that way. But there's also more subtle ways that geography can play into who gets elected in an at-large system. A lot of studies in Vancouver have shown that the voting population is largely concentrated in the wealthy West Side neighborhoods that Johnny mentioned earlier.
Right. So that means that even as a Hastings Sunrise resident, for example, who wants to run on Hastings Sunrise issues and get the people of Hastings Sunrise represented, you essentially have to appeal to, say, single-family homeowners by the Shaughnessy Golf Course, because their votes also count to elect you. And that wouldn't be the case if we had wards.
Yeah, exactly. So by not dividing up the city, you really wind up disproportionately representing certain groups of people. But this whole situation where our candidates wind up having to appeal to voters all over the city, not just voters from their own area, is actually the cause of another super weird quirk of our municipal politics.
Oh no, Vancouver is weird in even more ways. I'm shocked.
Vancouver is weird in all of the ways.
The Conservatives will the Green Party, position that reduces the NDP to third-party status.
You know how, federally, the parties you always hear about are the Liberals and the Conservatives and the NDP and so on, but then locally we have the NPA and COPE and Vision Vancouver and all of these other parties?
Yeah.
That's weird. That's weird because other provinces in Canada don't really have parties at the local level. In Ontario, where Doug Ford wants to cut all of those councillors, political parties are actually banned in local politics. So everyone who gets elected there does so as an independent. And this ties into the whole question about wards or not wards, because if you're running as a local candidate and you're doing so without a ward system, then you have to get your message out across the entire city. which is hard.
You have to remember that Vancouver is an outlier in this case with a consistent party system since the 1930s.
That's Jack Lucas, a political science professor at the University of Calgary. He's a bit of an expert on the history of Vancouver's civic government.
So what happened in the other cities was that
Jack narrates the rise and fall of Canadian political parties and explains that other provinces got rid of them because of the perception parties were too powerful or just not needed at the local level.
It has to do with the way people really think about what municipal politics is all about. And there's this long-standing and deeply held view that municipal politics just isn't about ideology. It's the classic quote that there's no right-wing or left-wing way to fill a pothole or pave a road. There's no conservative or liberal way to build a bridge. On the other side of the debate, it gives voters a much easier time deciding who they're going to vote for, particularly in at-large systems where they have lots of votes to cast. And parties are also defended just by rejecting the premise of the argument of the nonpartisans that there's nothing ideological about city politics. So a lot of people say, well, it's very obvious that city politics is ideological in character.
So parties might actually be super relevant in municipal politics because local politics aren't necessarily apolitical. And that's what we're seeing in our election this year. I mean, there's a notable amount of politics and ideology involved in something like the housing crisis. For example, should we have social housing or just increase supply?
Yeah, totally. There's for sure politics in bike lanes.
Yeah, or how to solve the opioid crisis.
Mm-hmm.
And having parties listed next to names on the ballot obviously helps voters know where candidates stand on issues like these, because they can more easily learn the values of, say, a handful of parties than 100 individual candidates.
Yeah, that is true. Although one of the things that critics of the at-large system always say is that if we did split the city up into wards, so if each voter only had to vote on candidates within their neighborhood, then there wouldn't even be so many dang names on the ballot paper. Like, at the last election, we actually had 149 names listed on the ballot, which is probably pretty hard for voters to sort through, even with a party system.
Yeah, that's probably true. And even besides voting, I have to wonder what else not having a ward system means for Vancouver. Because not only is our electoral system weird, our 2018 civic election also seems pretty weird. In this election, we've seen more political parties spring up, and many of these have found a place in the middle of the political spectrum. This is something I asked Jack Lucas about.
Sure. So I'll tell you a little about a classic political science theory of voting, which is called median voter theory, which is the idea that, assuming lots of other things that we won't talk about are in place, a candidate is going to try to put together a platform that represents the median voter in their constituency, the person who represents the middle of the road position. And the reason for that is because if you can capture that median position, then the people who are closest to you from both the right and the left will vote for you. And since there are a lot of people in the middle, you will do well. So that's median voter theory in a very, very small nutshell, like a pistachio shell. Now, the reason this matters for Vancouver is because if you have a ward, then what you're trying to target, assuming median voter theory is true, what you're trying to target is the median voter in that ward. Now, I don't want to go too far down the road of saying median voter theory explains everything there is to explain in the world, but it does suggest that in an at-large system like Vancouver, you're going to have that pressure, particularly for parties that want to be in power as opposed to shape the debate. If they're pursuing power, then there is always that pressure.
Me personally, it's the right time for me.
The time to call it quits. After 10 years as mayor of Vancouver, Gregor Robertson says he won't run again in this fall's municipal election.
Is there anything about this election and its candidates and what we're seeing so far that seems at all unusual or different from other elections in previous years?
Right, the rise of the independent.
Not only without a majority, I mean, it seems pretty likely there may not be a majority on council, but there could be as many as, 4 or 5 different affiliations on there,
right.
Maybe even more. I don't know.
That's exactly it. We've never really had that situation before.
Ever? Yeah. I mean,
this is a unique election.
Yeah.
Now, you have to
hope and a plan. And that is what we are offering.
Say yes.
Say yes.
Say yes.
Say yes.
To taking good ideas.
Say yes to not playing politics.
Say yes. Yes.
So, median voter theory seems like a reasonable explanation for the rise we're seeing in centrist and self-described centrist parties in this civic election.
Yeah, I found this really interesting. I mean, the theory definitely fits with what we talked about in the last installment about Vision emerging as a moderate version of the more left-leaning Cope.
And now Yes Vancouver is sort of like a more moderate version of the NPA. Our most right-wing civic party.
Yeah, and Pro Vancouver, that other new party, also identifies as something more toward the middle.
And Jack sees this trend towards centrism as a potential indicator of something more.
In a way, this also reminds me of the period when political parties kind of died off in other Western Canadian cities. What happened was that it wasn't that they just went away. It was more that they kept changing their names, and there were new parties popping up at every single election, and then those parties would go away and a new party would emerge. And it was hard for voters to tell which parties were even related to which other parties in the past. And it all kind of slowly disintegrated.
Wow, so looking at patterns in history is actually really cool and makes me realize that just because things are the way they are now, that doesn't mean that they were always that way.
And doesn't mean they'll always stay that way either.
Yeah, and so if we are on the verge of some sort of significant electoral change, we have to think about what that might look like. And obviously we've been talking a lot about wards and what they would look like, but there's also PR as an option.
Yeah, and that's an option we're voting on at the provincial level this October, too.
Right, so that change at the provincial level could affect our local government.
And to me, what makes these changes really interesting is that getting rid of our at-large system and adopting wards, or PR, or whatever else it might be, is ultimately about much more than who ends up getting elected. It's also about what kinds of representation we prioritize when it comes to local government.
In some ways, it has to do with making a decision about the kinds of communities and the forms of representation that are most important. With a ward system, the assumption is that what's most important is geography, right? That distinct parts of the city get representation.
Everyone knows Shaughnessy Homes.
Kitsilano defines multicultural. There are every type.
When I think of Vancouver's Chinatown, I picture open markets, paper lanterns.
The alley in Vancouver's Point Grey neighborhood got very heated on Sunday.
And with an at-large system, it has more to do with the idea that there are these city-wide communities, maybe ideological communities or class or whatever it might be.
Here, march with other gays, lesbians, queers throughout the Lower Mainland.
Tax the rich to house the poor!
And that the most important priority is to represent those pan, you know, citywide voices rather than specific geographic communities.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, I mean, it seems like, to me, the least democratic electoral system is what we have now in Vancouver with no wards and no proportional representation. And then slightly more democratic would be having wards that were divided along sort of community lines, though populations are shifting. You know, there's a lot of gentrification and stuff happening in the city. And that ultimately the most democratic would probably be to just have an at-large system that has proportional representation. But I guess that's a subjective takeaway.
Well, you know, we get into ever deeper waters here about what a more or less democratic system really looks like and what kinds of aspects of democratic system we should be prioritizing. But it is certainly true that a small majority of voters in Vancouver, given the current system, has the potential to determine an overwhelming majority of city council seats because of the slightly unusual at-large majoritarian system that the city of Vancouver has. But I think what you're noticing is that there are these clear trade-offs, and there's no system that captures all of the things we want to take out of an electoral system, you know, without any of the drawbacks.
Well, here we are at the end of a long and confusing story with no clear answer.
Yeah, I'm starting to learn that's sort of how politics is. One thing we've learned, though, is that the party system and the at-large system do kind of perpetuate each other, because appealing to the entire city takes resources that only a party can really provide.
Right, and since you're just one of over 100 names on the ballot, it's hard for you to reach the whole electorate, aka the whole city, unless you're with a party that's known and has a clear message.
Yeah, without party affiliation, people don't know what you stand for unless they've really done their homework. And that's something most people don't do.
And in line with that, it's also true we haven't had an independent elected to council in the last 30 years. But I wonder if this might be changing. If, in fact, we are on the cusp of joining the rest of Canadian cities by getting rid of our civic political parties and perhaps adopting wards or PR, could this be the rise of the independent?
Yeah, I wonder. Plus, with the party landscape changing and so few incumbents running, this year certainly gives them a better chance. Plus, if there are these obvious downsides to the system we do have, like that we're not representing the whole city equally, or that we keep voting in people who live next to golf courses, maybe the conditions are right for a broader change. So it didn't sound like I'm in a cave.
Ooh. All right, this is me talking. This is a test for me talking. Thank you for listening. How We Got Here, Part 2, Vancouver's Civic Government, was made by me, Alex DeBoer, and Zoe Power.
Why wouldn't that us just...
Because it's in a thing. Because Audacity is garbage.
Okay, but we are recording and we can move in. Okay, great.
Research by Zoe Power.
Jack's talking.
Editing by me, Alex DeBoer. Music by Artem Bemba. Looks good.
Yeah, look, my waves are bigger than your waves.
Yeah.
No, they're about
also featuring a live performance of the Apollo Ghost album Hastings Sunrise by Chris Arific. Am I going to say wow?
I don't know. Do you want to listen to the bit before it?
Other sounds from freesounds.org. No.
I can be the bit before it.
No, it's okay.
In all the other cities in Canada. Wow.
Special thanks to Jack Lucas, Johnny Wakefield, Madeline Taylor, and the entire news collective at CITR 101.9 FM.
That's really weird.
I'm laughing. Is it like a generous offering to you? Okay. Let's do this thing. Seeking Office is brought to you by CITR's news collective and produced by Alex DeBoer. Our theme music is by Artem Bemba. Thank you for listening.